We opened on the 25th of July in 1997 to open a fun bar that was welcome to everyone. I started here at Stonewall in the early years as Candy Box. And then in about 2004, I became the promotions and marketing manager. So 16 years later, I'm still doing that.
I hope you like femmes. I own 40 skirts. I'm a big liberal and you'll like my cooking.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. The Australian Capital Territory acts against conversion therapy. It's the end of the rainbow for Shanghai Pride, and Sydney's Stonewall Hotel finds ways to party during the pandemic. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 29th, 2020. The Australian Capital Territory is the latest down under jurisdiction to make subjecting a child to so-called conversion therapy a crime. Henceforth, in the Act, practitioners of the bogus therapy can get prison terms of up to a year and fines up to $24,000. The new law also protects adults with impaired decision-making ability from those who claim to put LGBTQ people on the straight and narrow. A majority of 14 votes from Labour and Green members of Parliament bested the 11 Liberals in opposition. Lawmakers in the state of Queensland passed similar legislation last week. Their bill was criticized for covering only healthcare professionals, even though the most egregious forms of the therapy are often performed in religious settings. However, the Act's legislation covers professional and religious or other informal settings. Faith-based critics expressed concerns that freedom of religion would be restricted under the measure. A government statement said the law will not prevent religious schools from teaching the tenets of their faith, including teachings on homosexuality or gender identity. It is aimed only at practices that actively seek to change the sexuality or gender identity of a person. Australian queer advocacy organization Just Equal says it's a vast improvement on the Queensland law and rated the Act law 7 out of 10. Where the Act law fails, according to spokesman Ivan Hinton-Tehoe, is that it does not ban promoting false claims about conversion therapy through advertising or referrals, nor any other attempts to suppress sexual orientation and gender identity.
Anchorage is now the first city in the U.S. state of Alaska to ban conversion therapy on minors. By a vote of 9-2 this week, the Anchorage Assembly banned medical professionals from trying to turn queer people straight or cisgender. Unfortunately, like the law in Queensland, Australia, the ordinance applies only to licensed doctors and therapists. Clergy members acting in a religious capacity, unlicensed counselors, and parents are specifically exempted. Nevertheless, Gay Assembly Chair Felix Rivera told the Anchorage Daily News that one day this practice will be banned throughout the United States. Alaska's largest city now joins dozens of others across the country that ban the practice in one form or another. It also makes Alaska the 40th state in which at least one jurisdiction has banned the discredited therapy.
Shanghai Pride has come to the end of the rainbow. Shanghai has stood out among Chinese cities for successfully hosting the country's longest-running annual LGBTQ Pride celebration. But the organizers announced in an open letter posted online this week that they were regretfully canceling all upcoming activities and taking a break from scheduling any future events. Only a vague need to protect the safety of all involved was cited as the reason. COVID-19 social distancing restrictions have largely been lifted in the city after a sharp drop in cases. Shanghai Pride did hold a number of successful in-person events in mid-June, although nothing as in-your-face as a Pride parade has ever been attempted. Their celebrations have consisted of art exhibits, fun runs, films, dances, job fairs, and other relatively low-key events. However, CNN reports that there's been increasing government pressure aimed at individual group members to the point of where it was disrupting their day jobs and normal lives. The cancellation of Shanghai Pride has been widely lamented on social media, according to Reuters. The subject has been viewed more than 17 million times on China's Twitter-like Weibo.
The COVID-19 pandemic has delayed the second-ever LGBTQ Pride March in the Bosnian capital of Sarajevo, prompting a high-profile imam in the city to thank Allah. Muhammad Velish told his 75,000 Facebook followers, "In every misfortune and tragedy, there is also a grain of happiness, goodness, and beauty. May the gay parade never return to our city and country." The spiritual hierarchy of Bosnia's Muslims quickly distanced itself from Velish. An office of the Grand Mufti spokesman told Radio Free Europe, "This is his personal position, and it is not the position of the entire Islamic community." Velish clearly speaks for a segment of that community, as his post has been liked more than 4,000 times. Sarajevo's first Pride March was held in September 2019, marching to the cry, "Ima Izak," roughly translated as "coming out." Volatile protests, organized by conservative religious leaders, preceded the march, and there was heavy security presence. The second march was scheduled this year for August 23rd. A statement by defiant organizers stressed that the march was only being postponed due to the epidemiological situation.
The government of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban seems to be following in the homophobic footsteps of neighboring Poland. During Budapest's COVID-created virtual Pride celebration in mid-August, a hardline soccer fan tore down a rainbow flag from a municipal building and set it on fire. The leader of a far-right fringe group was seen 2 days later in a social media post proudly removing a rainbow flag from a municipal building and throwing it in a trash bin. Police detained both perpetrators. Far-right Orban has been stoking anti-queer sentiment in recent public appearances. Queer rights groups say his outspoken hostility to LGBTQ people has increased since he won a third term in 2018. His close ally, the Speaker of Parliament, has equated adoption by LGBTQ people with pedophilia. Orban used an event commemorating the end of World War I this week to lament the erosion of what he called Christian values and decried Western Europe's experiments with a godless cosmos, rainbow families, migration, and open societies. He declared that the new monument dedicated to the end of the Great War would be a call to Central European countries to rally around the so-called Polish flagship. Orban seems to be sealing his bond with Poland's recently re-elected Law and Justice Party president, Andrzej Duda. Duda has dehumanized LGBTQ people as an ideology worse than the Soviet Union's.
U.S. federal courts have delivered transgender rights victories for the third consecutive week. In Richmond, Virginia, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit ruled that the Gloucester County School District violated the Constitution when it denied transgender male student Gavin Grimm access to boys' bathrooms. The same court ruled in Grimm's favor in 2016, and the U.S. Supreme Court was set to consider the school district's appeal in 2017. But then the Trump administration overturned the rule that trans students be given access to sex-segregated facilities on campus that match their gender identity under federal civil rights laws governing public education. So the high court sent the case back to the Fourth Circuit. Democratic presidential candidate and former Vice President Joe Biden has promised to reinstate that Obama-era rule, along with several others that the Trump administration has spent the past 4 years trying to undo. Gavin Grimm started the legal ball rolling when he sued Gloucester High School for denying him the right to use the boys' bathroom in 2015. Now he's a 20-year-old college student. The August 26th Fourth Circuit reaffirmation of Grimm's bathroom rights noted the Supreme Court's recent LGBTQ right-to-work decision. Using its clarification of sex, Justice Henry F. Floyd wrote for the 2-to-1 majority that, "We have little difficulty holding that a bathroom policy precluding Grimm from using the boys' restrooms discriminated against him on the basis of sex." Grimm issued a statement through his representatives at the American Civil Liberties Union. "All transgender students should have what I was denied, the opportunity to be seen for who we are by our schools and our government." He said the ruling was an incredible affirmation for not just me, but for trans youth around the country.
Finally, the stork has visited another same-gender penguin couple. female Gentoo penguin couple Electra and Viola hatched another penguin's egg this week at the Oceanographic Aquarium in the Spanish city of Valencia. Australian male penguin couples Sven and Magic went viral after hatching baby girl Svenjik in 2018 at Sea Life Zoo in Sydney. They received a second egg to foster last year. Penguin moms Rocky and Marama at Sea Life Aquarium in London made news last year after adopting what was described as the world's first genderless penguin chick. Like their predecessors in Australia and England, pictures of the Spanish penguin couple and baby chick have gone viral. The Valencia Aquarium captioned its photos this week, "Welcome to the world, little one."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending August 29th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency, but is still being written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay healthy.
And I'm John Dyer V. Stay safe.
In the days before COVID-19, it was always party time at the Stonewall Hotel, one of Sydney, Australia's most popular queer bars. Promotions and marketing manager Glenn Hansen and his alter ego Candy Box are working hard to maintain the fun and the community through it all. He shared some fond memories with Sydney correspondent William Broom and talked about adapting to the difficult present and planning for a new normal future.
Hi, Glenn. Thanks for joining us here on This Way Out.
My pleasure.
It's great to interview you because 20 years ago, as a British backpacker, the Stonewall Hotel was the first gay bar in Sydney that I visited. Can you tell us a bit about the history of the Stonewall Hotel?
We opened on the 25th of July in 1997. Obviously, we take our name from the Stonewall riots of 1969. And so that's how Stonewall Here started, was, you know, to build a Stonewall here and to be about equality and about the LGBTQIA community and open a fun bar that was welcome to everyone.
And it's on three floors, isn't it? And there's different types of entertainment on each floor.
Yeah, so it's a heritage listed building over three floors. We've actually three floors and four bars. Yeah, we do have normally, apart from the COVID era, we have entertainment every night of the week, seven nights a week, and everything from karaoke to trivia to, you know, big drag shows to boys on the bar, go-go boys to, you know, special charity nights. Stonewall's always been about giving back to the community. So, you know, we've obviously done a lot with the different charity organisations over the years. It's also become a celebrity hangout when they're in town and, yeah, you know, a pillar of the gay community.
How did you become involved with the Stonewall Hotel yourself?
I actually worked in this building before it was Stonewall. It used to be a club called The Loft, and then it closed down for a couple of years. So it was still the same owners. So when Stonewall opened, I was actually working at the Beresford then, but then I started work as a drag performer. So I started here at Stonewall in the early years as Candy Box. And then in about 2004, I became the promotions and marketing manager. So 16 years later, I'm still doing that.
Can you tell us a bit more about Candy Box, please?
Okay, so Candy Box, I guess, yeah, was I drag on the strip probably about six nights a week in different clubs and around the area and out at Penrith Panthers. And so sort of started off more as a stand-up comedian, then went into more mainstream drag shows. Lucky enough, won some Diva Awards for Bitch of the Year, which is being good on a mic. I've won Queen of Hearts for, you know, Charity Queens. I got inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Drag Hall of Fame, 2 years ago, which is a great honour.
Congratulations.
And, you know, drag gave me a lot of opportunities, especially back in the 90s where drag queens were almost like the spokespeople of the community. They were the ones on stage, you know, teaching people about safe sex and how to go home safely and look after your friends. So drag queens were very important, you know, especially in the 90s, being on mics in the early 2000s through the AIDS epidemic and, you know, being the voices of the community. So that was my main reason of sort of being involved and being a bit more of an activist with, you know, Stonewall and Pride, and all those things came from being out there and seeing what the community needed and working with people like ACON and the AIDS Trust. And so, you know, my journey, because earlier on I was an actor before I was a drag queen. So when I got to Sydney and, you know, it's hard to get acting work, and I saw these drag queens walking around off the street, I thought, maybe I'll try that. So I came up with Candy Box, and she had a Canadian accent, and went from there. And so it was like a character to me to begin with. And then all of a sudden there was money to be made after Priscilla and getting corporate gigs, and drag become my way. And then obviously, because I was still interested in entertainment, then taking over the job here, where now I put on the shows and hire the entertainers and DJs, it's all sort of come full circle.
And Candy Bock was at World Pride last year in New York. What are your favourite memories?
I had lots of great memories. I mean, to me, World Pride in New York, it was like the whole city had turned gay. It was amazing. Like, you know, we were so welcomed. Maxie and I were in drag 6 nights. I was in drag in LA before that, and then about 6 nights in New York. So, you know, everything from the opening ceremony with, you know, Whoopi Goldberg. I loved seeing Cyndi Lauper, the closing ceremony with Deborah Cox, people like that. But it was just the whole feel of the place, you know, going to Stonewall over there. You know, I've been to New York a few times, but I just thought World Pride was above and beyond. Like, it was an amazing atmosphere every time. We were sort of staying in Hell's Kitchen every time we left the house. It was amazing, you know, and so welcoming. And it was great to catch up with people at the Stonewall Inn over there, who I've met a couple of times, and keep that connection going as well and just be a part of it. But, you know, it was amazing.
You mentioned Maxie. Maxie Shield is, of course, one of Sydney's favourite and best-known drag queens. Now, you're very much a part of the LGBTIQ plus community. Can you tell us a bit more about the Sydney Pride Festival and the Stonewall Hotel's involvement?
So Stonewall's always been involved with the Pride Festival since I started here, so in the 23 years. But it was probably in about 2009 when the Pride Centre closed down, and the people that were running at Pride at the time closed down. And we sort of didn't take it over. We started coordinating the festival and making it into more of a festival and opening it up to the other venues. So that was in about 2009, and it's grown each year. You know, it's a grassroots festival, which is obviously mainly there to remember the history of the Stonewall riots, the history of the first Mardi Gras that all happened in June. So it's more a grassroots festival where smaller companies and art galleries and things can get involved and that maybe don't shine as much through the Mardi Gras festival because they are smaller. So it's more, you know, a history month here. And this year, obviously, because of the COVID and everyone was doing so much online, we decided to make it a love stream and basically show what everyone was doing online and, you know, include other businesses and LGBTQIA content that was happening in Sydney at the time. So we ended up with about 135 events in the program online, which was great. And I think one of the things that it showed this year by streaming, like normally we have the Pride launch at Stonewall, which holds about 200 people downstairs. This time it went out to like 8,000 people on the stream. So it was interesting, people calling me saying it was great to actually hear the speeches, you know. I think it just shows us for the future that with streaming, that it has taught us how to do things from home and what we can achieve, as well as in the clubs and at the festivals. So, you know, which unfortunately so many Pride festivals were closed down this year. But it was just a good way to stay connected, and especially with people in rural communities that maybe get a chance to see drag story time for their kids, or you know, experience DJs online and hear speeches. And there were companies like the Gay Lesbian Business Association had a Zoom meetings on there, and you know, just to stay connected, and hopefully people still feel some pride, even though they were isolated in their own homes.
I mean, it's something I've heard from quite a lot of people, people particularly who live in regional Australia or the suburbs, who don't get to the city much. They felt that bars and venues have been reaching out, and they've been able to enjoy a lot of the entertainment that us who are fortunate and privileged to live near the city and access it have been able to enjoy for many years.
Yeah, and that was a lot of the letters I got through Pride, like people enjoying it and like seeing the Pride launch and watching Global Pride, you know, the Global Pride, the 24 hours. But it was just showing artists and people around the world. And I think it was really interesting for the people that don't get to experience it or maybe feeling alone or haven't come out yet and they're in rural communities to see what goes on and, you know, feel like they're not alone. And I think that's an important thing. And because people's mental state too through the whole COVID has been affected, it was just nice to be able to reach out or people to reach out to you. You know, people would write me letters saying my kids really enjoyed story time with Anaconda or things that they wouldn't normally get to see.
How has COVID affected you, your colleagues, your performers at the Stonewall Hotel?
Yeah, it's been very hard. Like initially the hardest thing was saying goodbye to all the performers and DJs when we went into lockdown and not knowing when we would come back. At that time, then we started Live from Stonewall, which was turned around in about 3 days with Mike Worsley and a whole group of producers and directors and production team who were all out of work. So we all came together and said, okay, let's make this web TV series with, you know, host Minnie Cooper and Steve Milne, and let's try it and do 10 shows. And so everyone was giving up their time for free. Like we did have, you know, GoFundMes and that happening, but it wasn't really covering the costs. We were just all coming together and working hard on that with the venue closed. So, and then we did a Pride special, a 2-hour Pride special. So it gave me something to hold on to. And obviously I retained my job, but, and we kept some people on JobKeeper, which we've been lucky enough since reopening to be able to bring back. But at the moment with the reopening here, we're at the 4 square meter rule. So downstairs at Stonewall, we can only have 43 people. You know, so we've gone from a thriving venue that can hold over 500 people and, you know, has about 7,000 people through a week to doing the social distancing. So we still have don't have shows at the moment. We have been doing a late night cabaret once every couple of weeks where people pay $20 and they get champagne and they watch a show and have a DJ, but it's, you know, all sitting down. No one can dance still. It's really hard because financially we can't afford to bring entertainment back at this stage. You know, places like Stonewall, everything has to come out of the bar. We're not a venue that has a cover charge normally. So people don't realize the rent of the building, staff, it's security, which you still have to have. Everything has to come out of the bar. And when you can only hold 43 people, it makes it very difficult to be able to make the money to be able to bring everything back. So I think that won't happen till the next stage. Now with what's happening in Victoria, we don't know when that could be or whether we'll get a second wave here. And yeah, it's scary times, you know, when you just got to get through as best you can.
What do you think the future holds for the Stonewall Hotel and also other bars along the main gay drag on Oxford Street?
We've just been through such a hard time, you know, because we went through the lockout laws for a couple of years and finally that got lifted. And then obviously we were hit with the bushfires in Australia and now with COVID. So it's been a very hard time for venues in particular and Oxford Street. But I do think we're all survivors and we will regenerate this strip. Things like Mardi Gras are so important to us and Oxford Street. And, you know, we're very determined here at Stonewall that we'll get through it and, you know, we'll recreate and it'll be the welcoming LGBT place that it's always been. But, you know, things will be different. And, you know, social distancing and cleanliness and people washing their hands. Like, there's certain things that we've learned from this that I think we will all keep in place for a long time to make a safer community. We've never had anything like COVID before, so it's devastating. And our main thing is to keep our staff and our customers and everyone healthy. People want to dance. People want to have fun, and that's the whole thing. And not being able to do that is very hard for anyone. Not being able to hug your friends is hard. So, yeah, hopefully I think we're strong enough and we will get through. And hopefully, you know, we don't have a second wave here where think that changes and slowly we can rebuild and come back to normal or some form of normality.
Glenn Hansen, Promotions and Marketing Manager from the Stonewall Hotel, thank you so much for speaking to us.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
This is William Broom in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
Is your TV news anchor crush keeping you warm during the quarantine? Lesbian singer-songwriter comic Jamie Anderson is ready to make a serious commitment. Well, not that serious, with her dream journo diva.
Thanks to At Home for joining us this hour. Very happy to have you with us. Halfway through the week already. Where does the time go?
You were on the cover of Rolling Stone. I was on page 20 of the Tucson Weekly. You're a Rhodes Scholar. I have a BS from a state university. I hope you like femmes. I own 40 skirts. I'm a big liberal and you'll like my cooking. You're really smart and handsome. I'm not bad looking. We're perfect for each other, can't you see? Rachel Maddow, marry me. You've got a show on MSNBC. I can't help but swoon when you read the news. I've got 10 followers on Instagram and 21 subscribers on YouTube. No, 22. Your books are New York Times bestsellers. My mom says my books are the best ever seen. You've won Emmys and lots of awards. I won for Best Folk in Tucson in 93. Rachel Maddow, marry me. You've got a partner I can share. I have a wife, she won't care, I think. Rachel Maddow, marry me. Don't you want to live in Canada? Our anthem's easier to sing. We have free health care and milk in bags. We have 20% of the world's fresh water. I know you like to fish. I like to eat fish. Do you like older women? I just wrote you this song, and is this thing on? Rachel Maddow, marry me. I do.
Jamie Anderson's Marry Me is from her newly released Songs from Home, available from Bandcamp, iTunes, and Goldenrod. Her website is jamieanderson.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael Taylor Gray and John Dyer V, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from William Broom. Demi Lovato and Jamie Anderson performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors John Beaupre and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Fresh FM, Nelson, Tasman, Blenheim, and Eastern Golden Bay, New Zealand, Radio Free Santa Cruz, California, WYHS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Now y'all stay safe and stay tuned.